Blog Talk Radio.
Regal Poet Radio.
Build an institution that you need to build legal office. Scott, compadres, and as luck would have it on the show today, we are blessed to have a poet who is of Jewish descent and is known for speaking on and incorporating the element of hip-hop within his works and, of course, his own personal background. Kevin Koval is a poet, educator, and organizer who has been hailed the unofficial poet laureate of Chicago. That's due to the number of projects he has brought to the Chicago area and beyond the Chicago community. He is a writer, authoring several books, including critically acclaimed Shtick, a book of poems highlighting his Jewish heritage and his surrounding cultural influences. His writings have appeared on CNN.com, Huffington Post, NPR in Chicago, and many other prominent publications. Koval is the recent recipient of a New Voices, New Visions Award from the Kennedy Center for a play he co-authored with Idris Goodwin about graffiti writers titled This Is Modern Art, which preeminated at Stephen Wolf Theater in the winter of 2015. I promise not to be tongue-tied all day today. Kevin is known for his numerous arts-based curriculums, which is something that I personally admire. It's based around many infusions of poetry and hip-hop, including the hip-hop aesthetics taught at University of Illinois, Chicago. He is the founder of multiple organizations such as Young Chicago Authors and Louder Than a Bomb, an annual youth poetry slam competition that started in Chicago and is now not only celebrating 16 years, but has expanded into other states and countries, including Canada, which that is not news to any of you guys that listen to me. As you know, Regal Poet has been a firm supporter and was heavily involved with LTAP in South Florida, and proudly so this past April. Now you can hear from the major force behind that foundation personally and see how you can develop yourself as an artist in the same manner. Currently, Mr. Koval has released Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip-Hop, and this is on Haymarket Books, and it is an anthology fusing poetry and hip-hop to welcome a genre that finds its commonplace in slam poetry, which is all in true KC fashion. So here with us today is Kevin Koval. We're very pleased to have him. Let's go ahead and have him come on the line with us. Kevin, can you join us?
Yeah, I'm here. Y'all can hear me?
Yes, we can. Wonderful. It's so great to have you on the program. Thank you for coming on. I know this is a really busy season for you, and it seems like you just keep adding on more to the mix.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the space and the opportunity and, appreciate what y'all are doing. So thank you for having me.
Not a problem. So the first question we always ask, because the show is based around artist entrepreneurship, is do you consider yourself an artist entrepreneur? And if you do, what does that mean to you?
That's a good question. And I think it's important to, I think it's important to understand that as an artist, you are also going to be your best advocate and most reliable business partner. You know, it's really on you to also operate like you're a small business. You know, understand that your grind is absolutely the craft of your chosen art or arts, as well as if you want people to hear it outside of like your homies and, you know, dog or whatever, you got to like also find ways to, you know, and avenues to open for yourself to reach an audience that you desire. And that really is about being an entrepreneur and imagining what are the various platforms for your craft, and really seeing beyond the limitations even of the craft. I mean, I think if I would have, and like my contemporaries would have, just been satisfied with a typical poetry audience 15, 20 years ago, we would have a very small number of people involved. But I think we saw beyond some of those limitations, and then, you know, we're entrepreneurial in the sense that we reached a larger and larger audience intentionally.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree. And I thank you guys, because that would be the same contemporaries that I would be associated with. I thank you guys for that vision, because it allowed those that may have not seen it to now elevate themselves. And that's, you know, the premise of the show. So we truly appreciate you and so many others who saw past limitations. Well, let's start off with telling us about your current project, Bixby's Poets.
Yeah, we're very excited about this book. It's it's been a long time coming, and it is an idea that I've had for a long time, in part because of anthologies that I read as a younger writer that really motivated me to even want to write poems at all. I mean, I came to poetry via hip hop. I wanted to, you know, like any kid who I think hears and feels called to the language specifically, like I wanted to rap, and I didn't know anyone who rapped. And, you know, in this age of Iggy Azalea, I think we probably need a moratorium on white rappers anyway. You feel me? Like, I know
right.
We need to have a conference and a panel conversation about
yes.
it, but
I'm with you.
Yeah. So we should talk about all that. And, but poetry, hip hop led me to the library, and it was in the stacks of the library where a few anthologies kind of like dropped into my lap, almost literally. One was The Black Poets by Dudley Randall, in which I read the Black arts poets for the first time, Selena Sanchez and Nikki Giovanni and Jane Cortez and Amiri Baraka and Haki Madhubuti, then Donnell Lee, who later became my mentor. And then I was put on to Black Fire by Larry Neal and Amiri Baraka, and an anthology as well called New American Poetry, edited by Donald Allen, which was some of the first spaces that not only Amiri Baraka was published in, but also some of the beat poets and Frank O'Hara, who's a poet from the New York School of Poetry that I really love and admire. And so as I started to read more and discover my own contemporary poets, folks who resonated with me in terms of their narrative and style and aesthetics, you know, I thought, well, here is a generation of young writers who are paying attention to other things other than just the history and the kind of lame, you know, Eurocentric canon of poetry, but really reaching into, not only inspired by the Black arts movement, but also inspired by this legacy of music, of American music and Black diasporic practice. And so, this notion that there was a hip-hop generation who was innovating a new kind of poetry on the page and at the microphone, and even those distinctions themselves are kind of boring and done. I wanted to put out this anthology. And so it was a conversation that kind of started with my homie who I write with, Idris Goodwin, who's, I think, like hip hop's August Wilson in a lot of ways, a really great gifted playwright and rapper. And we were over the phone one day. He's like, yeah, man. He's like, I think what we do, like, we're like the breakbeat poets. I'm like, run it back, what'd you say? He's like, yeah. I think, like, that's what we do. And I'm like, oh, damn, there it is, you know? And so I hollered at one of my former students and now, a really incredible poet, Nate Marshall, about getting involved in this project together. And then we brought in one of our homies, Quraysh Ali Lansana, kind of round out the trio of editors. And, you know, we just started to make a call. And really what the book is, The Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip Hop, is 78 poets from around the country, born 1961 to 1999. So spanning, you know, almost four generations of hip hop practitioners and you know, just exploring like what folks are doing on the page. And you know, in the book, you have every imaginable experience and a lot of different kinds of styles. So we put it out in April, and it's, you know, people seem to be responding and rocking with it. And now we're in the midst of going out on tour around the country for it. So we're excited.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that. And of course, congratulations to you and Idris for the recent recipient award that you got for the play that you guys wrote together. So, and it's interesting, whenever I listen to you and a lot of other poets that kind of have the same style, not in terms of how you speak, but just the whole, because I guess I compare it to what we would consider a poet in the 60s with the beatniks and that type of thing. Now, what would you label that style, if you could? Because it's not really conscious hip-hop that has its own style. Because you're bridging poetry and hip-hop together, what would you call it, or how would you compare it today?
Yeah, no, I think that's why we called it the breakbeat poets, because I think like we are creating a new aesthetic, a hip hop centered poetry that, you know, that I think we would, I feel comfortable calling breakbeat poetics, in part because it is employing some of the aesthetic strategies of hip hop cultural practice into the poem. And, you know, part of what that means, of course, is that it's also political because it deals with people's lives, and you cannot divorce one from politics, even if you try that itself. You know, to imagine yourself as apolitical and not participating in the, you know, in civic discourse and the social mores of the day is, you know, not really possible. And so, of course, these poems are political. They're also very much about the party. They're about the jam. I mean, hip-hop in the midst of New York City turning its back on young people of color in the South Bronx, they also find a way to continue to highlight and value one another and celebrate at the Park Jam. And so these poems are celebratory. There's odes, and there's also, you know, there's very critical, you know, beautifully conceived, tragic, you know, rants and insights into why we're in this moment where, you know, Black lives are radically undervalued and dehumanized still in this country. And so, you know, you really get the spectrum of human experience and what it means to be alive and, you know, a youngish person in this moment. I mean, but we have folks who are born in, again, 61, and folks who are born in 99. So it also spans kind of some intergenerational stuff too.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I love that because it is a style, and it's a style that I like. It's not personally mine, but I just love that we all have different niches and that we can embrace, and it keeps me connected to hip-hop as much as possible in a very cerebral way where I can actually think, so which is what I feel hip-hop should be about. So I appreciate you guys for doing that.
I think even in hip hop, like think about all the different kinds of styles within the culture itself. And I think that, you know, right. Hip hop is taking a lot of notes from, you know, general youth culture. I mean, and in some ways, you know, part of what drew me to hip hop in some ways in Chicago was an ethic that, at least in Chicago, an ethic that hip hop got from house music. And so to quote, you know, one of the homies, a woman named Boogie McLaren, who is a house educator and philosopher and dancer and dance instructor and kind of a culture keeper. You know, she says that house and youth culture at the time particularly practiced this notion of radical inclusivity. So it was kind of accepting you for where you're at and how you get down. And as long as you get down, then you could get down. And I think that that's really important when we think about also the inclusivity and practice of like the cipher in hip hop. KRS-One says it's why we build in a cipher. You hear me, kid? The government is building in a pyramid. And so a lot of ways, hip hop also offers a counter, not only narrative, but also a counter paradigm and model for social organization that is really seeing people where they're at and wanting to have them participate in democratic discourse and civic conversation.
And I completely agree with that. One thing that I love about the whole, we're calling it the breakbeat poet genre, is that it forces at this point, well, I guess I could say that this way. If there's a cipher, and that's where you can really truly see the people that are the artists that are really diving into their craft and really spending time with themselves alone, building their vocabulary, building their knowledge of their surroundings. And that's something that I feel that when poetry became infused with hip-hop, it kind of kept that original craftsmanship, if that makes sense. And that's what I truly, truly appreciate, because it forces the, when a poet comes around to, let's say, just a predominantly hip-hop area, it forces everyone to understand, okay, this is an art. It's something that you have to build. It's not just just spitting over beats. You know, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I find that
any time I go to a predominantly hip hop event and there's a cipher and there's a poet, a spoken word artist that's in the room, you see that element, and it forces people to understand that this is all a craft. It's not just just us getting down. And which goes into my next question: walk us through a hip hop aesthetics course. If we were at University of Illinois Chicago, I think that would be exciting for people to understand.
Word, yeah, it's fun, and I've been teaching this class with my homie Dr. Lisa Lee, who's a trained as a Frankfurt School philosopher, meaning like she is her field of study is really postmodern theory, which I knew not much about before we linked. And she, and I think she would say that she didn't really know much about hip hop, but we linked, and she invited me to start teaching with her this class about aesthetics. And it's a studio class as well. So I mean, from what I understand, it's one of the first courses in the country that is taking the aesthetic principles of hip hop and kind of breaking those down, and then having students who are some of them who are art students and some of them who are just needing a general education course are then making, regardless of their chosen genre, they're utilizing the aesthetics of hip hop cultural practice. And so, first of all, the class is a lot of fun. It's a super easy A. I mean, in a lot of ways, as long as you put in the work, you get the work back, you know? And that, I tell young people that all the time. Like, I'm like, if you feed the poem's going to feed you. If you feed the art's going to feed you. And so what it is like, we break it down from like, we tell the story of Kool Herc in the South Bronx, and we look at the social conditions that predicated that moment where Robert Moses built across town, across Bronx Expressway, and really cut up the South Bronx and segregated it and left it for dead in a lot of ways in the eyes of New York and America at large. And young people rallied and organized and created different social conditions and settings for themselves and their families. And that's a triumphant moment in some ways. But we also then get down to some of the foundational elements of the culture. So there's a sampling workshop, and there's a collage workshop, and we talk about issues of legibility and illegibility in hip hop cultural practice, and we go through all the various elements too. And you know, we have students in class who don't really consider themselves to be dancers, but we do a b-boy b-girl workshop usually with the homie Greg Monk in Chicago, and we do a house dance workshop with Boogie, and we do a graffiti hand style workshop with the homie Kane from DC 5 Crew in Chicago, and then we talk to a lot of people, but it's fun because I'll give you an example. Like in the sampling workshop, we work with a number of different folks, but for instance, there's an incredible young rapper and producer in Chicago named Saba of a crew called Pivot. He's got a project for the free that's downloadable called Comfort Zone, and one of the best projects of 2014 in my estimation. And so Sab comes in, he does a beat construction workshop utilizing sampling strategies. So the students, like, their homework is not to go make their own beat per se, but employ the aesthetic of sampling to their chosen craft. And so we have sculptors and painters and We have people who are writers, poets, and visual artists. But a few semesters ago, I had a chef in my class, and she really, like, her thing was baking. And so for the sampling workshop, she took 8 recipes of chefs that she loves, sampled the best little bits from those recipes, and made 1 cake and brought it into class, which is definitely also
nice.
Like giving an A. But it was just like ill
right.
how and also wrestle with, you know, these aesthetics in their own genre. You know, you don't need to come in like in an Adidas jumpsuit and, you know, bust a backspin. You could just like come to it how you are, learn, and then also, you know, hopefully get down.
Right. Awesome. Perfect analogy of also finding your voice in the arts and making that truly your passion. The great thing about the vision that you have is that taking something that a lot of people may say, oh, well, yeah, that's something that you may do as a hobby, but, you know, picking it up and making it your passion and now and in turn having other people broaden their mind and their scope, and maybe this is something that they'll decide, you know what, I wanted to go to med school. Not that med school is wrong, please, we need doctors. But you can, if that's not your passion, you know, this is something that you can do and live along doing it. Go ahead.
You're right. I think that's such an important notion that, you know, and my colleague Lisa Lee talks about this a lot, is that, you know, we also have a right to the arts in our public culture. You know, the arts are something that, and we see this how often and how quickly arts funding gets cut from public school and also from, from governmental budgets. And really it's like, we, regardless if you're a doctor, if you are a, if you're, you know, someone who picks up garbage, is like, all of us have the right to enjoy a painting and music and a park. And it should be part of our civic life too. You know, and so it, regardless of what you do, my dad drives an Uber, you know what I mean? Like, but he also loves musical theater, and like musical theater should be more accessible to him if that's what he wants to do. And so, you know, I think that these things are really important, and that's a good point, you know?
And at this time right now, with all the cuts that we are seeing, I'm glad you mentioned that, it does give artists an opportunity to develop, to such as yourself, develop your own thing and fight for that, fight for a grant for that, fight for it gives you an opportunity to live the art and also provide that service. You know, that's the positive way of looking at it. It is a struggle, but if the power is in numbers. If we have a lot of artists coming out of school, which I'm running into, most of the students that I teach art now have graduated, and they're saying, Ms. Prosper, I don't want to put the pen down, but I have to go to college. And then I'm encouraging them to, okay, well, how can you do it? It's really hard work. It's a risk. You have to show that this is what you truly want to do. For those, do you say the same thing to your students? Because I'm pretty sure they ask if there's a career in the arts.
No, I mean, yeah, and I think it's not easy. I mean, I don't get it twisted, right? And you know,
no, not at all.
You know, you have to really believe. You know, you have to believe in yourself, and you have to believe in those around you, and you'll also have to be willing to do stuff that, you know, you might not foresee yourself doing. I mean, you know, it wasn't until I made the decision to, like, just really, you know, I made the decision at 19, and I got lucky that I wanted to be a writer. I don't think everybody knows what they want to do even that young. And I tell a lot of my students who are, you know, around that same age that, like, look, you have a lifetime to know what you want to do. What you really should be about is exploration and seeing what the world has for you and what you're drawn to, and figure out what you love. And you should try to then do what you love for your life. And I got lucky because I knew at 19 that's what I wanted to do. I think that, you know, I also, from 19 then to probably 27, I did, you know, I drove a truck, I waited tables, I catered, I taught rollerblading, even though I didn't know how to rollerblade. You know what I mean? I did whatever I could in order to make ends meet. And I think you also, as an artist, need to be down to support. Like, and the reason why I did that is so I could support the time that I was writing. Like, I've been getting up at 7:23 every morning for a long time. Like, that's my sacred space in order to get up and get down, essentially get up and really put in the work. Like, these poems, these plays, you know, I'm writing a movie now, like, this stuff is not going to write itself. I got to get up and discipline myself in order to do that work. And basically all of those gigs were an investment in myself. And I think you also have to be down to make that commitment towards yourself and towards your craft, you know, as a young artist too.
Definitely, definitely. So now with these organizations that you are building, that you have developed, such as Young Chicago Authors, what are you seeking to build for the community at large what's the takeaway you want everyone to have?
Well, I mean, yes, some of it is absolutely changing this notion of who is a poet and who has the right to call themselves an artist. You know, when I was coming up in high school and elementary school, I thought poetry was only something that was done by dead white dudes who got lost in the forest. You know, it was like very much it seemed like all the art had already been made, you know, and that's the way it gets museumed and that's the way it gets taught. And, you know, hip hop is the call and response. It is the invitation to participate. And so part of the notion of Louder Than a Bomb and, you know, I think the spirit of Young Chicago Authors is absolutely saying that young people have an integral part to not only making art and contributing to arts culture, but also documenting their own stories. Because, you know, like in the spirit, in the same spirit of Gwendolyn Brooks and what most Def and Tully Paliz would say is real life documentary work, is that we are the best recorders and narrators of our own time and our own experience. And too often, if we let other people do it, they're going to either get it wrong or just flat out lie about us. And so I think part of what is essential is young people, particularly from neighborhoods who exist at the margins of a city like Chicago, are brought into the center of that conversation. So you can't have, you know, you can't have like the media just wiling out, be like, oh, Chirac this and this neighborhood's so bad and it's only murder, 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 when there are young people who are, you know, constantly, daily, and not just young people, but countering that narrative and, you know, living rich, incredibly complex lives too. And so part of our work, I think, is very much about broadening the spectrum of what it means to be a citizen in a city, as well as creating, I think, platforms and pathways for young artists to ultimately change these staid white institutions, you know, and I think we're seeing that too. So.
Right. Okay. So now with the credentials you have and you've built, a lot of people end up moving to LA, New York, Miami, those types of more metropolitan areas. Why did you stay in Chicago? Why was it important to be there?
Right. Well, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, Chicago is the greatest city in the world. No shots. No shots. But
okay.
That's true. That's verifiable. You know what I mean? You
just verifiable.
Check
okay.
It out. Verifiable. Yeah. On Twitter and elsewhere.
Okay.
I love the city. I think I also, because, you know, my family has been here like since, you know, my grandpa came, like fled the Ukraine in like the early 1900s. And so I also feel like a commitment to here. You know, I love it here. I also like the part of being a Chicagoan is that you have this bifurcated, dualistic type relate. It's like a love-hate relationship. And so I really do think Chicagoans are like some of the best hardworking people in the country. And I think like, so goes Chicago, so goes America in some ways. I think New York is really probably the capital of the world. It's international and cosmopolitan in its focus. And I love New York and I love LA. And I think LA, you know, I've gone back and forth between New York in Chicago for a few years, and I'm spending a lot of time in LA right now because we're starting a festival, a lot of the Nirvana Festival in Compton, and I love both these cities, but for me it's also very much about the kind of craft that I think Chicago makes its artists make. Chicago is a city of makers. It's a city of workers. And if you're an artist, then I think you also are held to the same constant grind of perfecting your craft. Because art is considered a commodity in some ways in this city, people don't care about what you did, and they don't care if, like, yesterday you were, like, hot. They care about what you're making today. And so for me as a writer, that means it's like, okay, well, shit, I got to get up and do this again. I don't know if I can swear. Sorry about that. You got to get up and do it again.
Right.
You know, and I appreciate that grind in the city. I also think, you know, look, we're also in a moment right now of a cultural renaissance. You know, I and again, of course, I'm a Chicago centrist and I'm mad biased, but you know, for me, some of the best music, the best art that's being made, it's being made by young Chicagoans. I mean, you look at, like, you know, look at, like, what people are bumping right now. It's, you know, for the last bunch of years, it's been everything from, you know, Chicago's, you know, so-called drill scene, from, you know, Keef and Lil Durk and King Louis and Sasha Gohard and Katie Got Bands, to, you know, Chance the Rapper and Vic Mensa and Mick Jenkins and No Name Gypsy. And also we're in the middle of an incredible kind of, you know, new soul renaissance, particularly with young women singers who are really, really great writers and doing their thing. And so, you know, it's also a very exciting time to be in Chicago as a fan, as a listener, and as an artist. And so, you know, I mean, again, no shots, but shots. Like, Chicago's the illest.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll keep my opinion of New York to myself. I'm a New Yorker, so, you know. But you said you love us, so we good.
I do. We're coming to y'all, too, now. We're about to be there for a few, so yeah.
I see this. Thank you for speaking about your culture a lot. I love that about you. There's no doubt that you're Jewish, you know, or is it, you know,
yes,
I love that,
yes.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate that because as a Haitian woman and just into cultural diplomacy, I'm really into us not diluting who we are as Americans. First, of course, with my, you know, our generation, but at the same time, we have a past, and our past is very, very important. So I want to thank you for that. Are you ready for the official Poet Laureate of Chicago title? I said that.
That's funny. Word. Yeah, I'm not holding my breath. You know what I mean? I think
okay.
I've made a few too many people salty at City Hall.
Okay.
But listen, you know, I'm down. I mean, I think there's also, I personally have, like, a bit of an issue even with that notion that, like, one is going to rise above the rest. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this
right.
one lore, it seems like too grandiose and pejorative and, you know, kind of in some ways counter to, you know, what I really believe. I'm a hip hop kid. I believe in the cipher. And so I believe that, like,
right.
when I like leave off on a word, you will pick it up and carry it until I'm ready to carry it again. And so that notion of like the laureate, the one poet, you know, it might be kind of whack to me ultimately, you know.
No right. Problem, but, you know, well, we love the unofficial because that means you're definitely doing it in a cipher way if you're the unofficial. So we like that. We'll continue doing that one. So tell us how to stay connected and how to get involved, how to stay connected and involved.
Well, yeah, thank you. I mean, you know, definitely. Just, you know, get at me on the internet. It's just at my name on everything, Twitter and Instagram. It's just, you know, Koval with a C, Kevin, at Kevin Koval everywhere. On Instagram, you know, I really appreciate and value the aesthetics of the culture. I spent a lot of time documenting graffiti throughout the country, and I'm, you know, continually amazed about not only the skill but also the risk young artists will go to in order to have their work seen or themselves seen, even anonymously. And so, you know, and then on Twitter, I'm kind of constantly just talking about what's going on in this world of like hip hop and poetry and the nexus of the two, as well as kind of updating folks what Louder Than a Bomb is doing, not only in Chicago, but now we have 15 sites around the country. And so in some ways, like, you know, the dispersal of the word would make the word grow. And so, you know, we're really on this campaign to push the breakbeat poets into not only spaces, like we're doing readings around the country and trying to get to as many colleges and high schools as we can, because I think this is going to be kind of the textbook. My hope is that this will be the textbook of this generation. And, you know, no longer do we have to rely on these Norton anthologies, which are, you know, ultimately racist and played anyway. But this can really be the standard of inclusivity and pushing young people to participate in writing their own poems. And then, you know, we're in the middle of really trying to ignite conversations about how to take hip hop poetics and also community organizing and merge the two in a festival like Louder Than a Bomb, or, you know, spread Louder Than a Bomb to other cities too. And so, you know, just at me on the internet, or you could check out the organization's website, youngchicagoauthors.org. The publisher is Haymarket Books, and they put up a breakbeat site for us. So it's a breakbeatpoets.com as well. And then we update with the tour schedule there too. So.
Wonderful, awesome. And any way that Regal Poet can support, we will be there because we are all about spreading that poetry as well. And we love the whole, almost like a time capsule in letters. So we love that. And
we're,
that's all the show we have for you today.
We're going to be out your way. We're going to be out your way. So come hang out with us. When we'll be at the Bronx Museum September 18th. I'll be at the New York Week in Poets Cafe later that night. We're going to be in Harlem on the 19th. We're at the Brooklyn Book Fest on that Sunday, and so, you know, we'll be in New York. You should come rock with us.
Oh, no, you guys are, yes. I am no longer in New York. I am in South Florida.
Ah, that's what's
up.
That's what's
up. So whenever you come down here, of course, to see Blue Apple, just let us know, and we'll support you guys there as well. Okay.
No,
well, that's all the show
we
have. Awesome. That's all the show we have for you today. You out there, I hope your pen is still writing. It still has ink, because Kevin gave us a lot of gems today to build on. So definitely follow him on all the social media using at Kevin Koval. Pick up the new project off of Amazon.com or on our Twitter page. We will put it there under Regal Poet, REGALPOETE. Thank you so much, Kevin, for being here with us today. We appreciate all you do for the artist entrepreneur. Stay regal, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. No problem. Anytime. All right, everyone, we bid you adieu. Tune in next week for another full impacted episode that is sure to inspire and inform you, as long as you are always ready to be yourself and be regal.